The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Taoiseach Micheál Martin has had a go at so-called NIMBYs. According to the Irish Independent, the Fianna Fáil leader told a private meeting of county councillors that people who already own their own homes should think of future generations before objecting to new housing. So, are NIMBYs the real source of our housing woes? We're joined by Conor Skeen, planning lecturer and Sunday Independent columnist, and also by Paul McCall, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West. Good morning and welcome to you both. Paul, first of all, what was the Taoiseach on about?
Well, I think Saturday was a fantastic opportunity to bring Fianna Fáil councillors from around the country together to discuss a whole range of topics with the Taoiseach. And I suppose, given the number of powers and resources which have been given to local authorities to build housing, I think the Taoiseach was putting out a challenge to say that we have to find ways to say yes to housing rather than taking easy opportunities to say no. And I suppose that was being directed at councillors around the country who often receive representations from people living in their area. Now, it's important to say that the Taoiseach also said that there are reasonable issues in which people can make observations on the planning process.
Yeah, I read in the same item in the Irish Independent that the Taoiseach himself 5 years ago had objected to student accommodation being built in his area on the basis of perhaps antisocial behaviour.
Yeah, look, as I say, there can be reasonable grounds, and often it can be to do with how traffic exits or enters an estate, how if there's unreasonable overbearing on a site and so on. But I think many people previously would have objected to sites because of the model that was being built on them, because they might have been buy to rent, because people couldn't purchase them in their own community. I think the number of powers and resources which we've given to local authorities has fundamentally changed what's being built. And I think the Taoiseach was saying,
yeah, but hang on a second.
If we're going to talk about a housing emergency, yeah, we have to act like it is an emergency.
But also, I mean, you give the planning regulator some power. So when Dublin City Council want to do something, the planning regulator says, oh, no, you can't do that. But going back to what powers councillors have, they are confined to basically the county development plan. You know, they're not supposed to interfere in the planning process. They have a planning department, but if a planner is sitting at his or her desk and there's a knock on the door and a councillor walks in and tries to influence the planning decision one way or the other of the planner, I mean, that would be inappropriate, unethical, immoral, and probably against the law.
Absolutely, Pat, but don't forget the flip side to this is that councillors are also the developers of housing. Local authorities are housing authorities, and so councillors now have the power to build cost rental, affordable purchase, social housing, all mixed income, mixed tenure sites, which are the things we've been talking about for many, many years. They have the power to assist people with dereliction. This is about providing more units and supply into the market. And often the difficulty for communities is that when you only have one type of supply coming from the private side of the market, that can build a lot of resentment in communities.
Okay,
and so councillors can respond to that by also putting forward really positive public housing projects.
Yeah. What's stopping the councillors doing all of this? Now, you know, the county manager or chief executive, depending on where we're talking about, has all the executive power, if you like. So what can councillors actually do, as I say, beyond the county development plan, which is their remit? What can they do to accelerate the construction of houses, social housing, the right to buy, all those kind of programmes that the government advocates? What can councillors actually do?
Well, actually, I think they have a really important role, and I think what was put out to them at the conference on Saturday was, is like, councillors should be identifying sites, perhaps sites that attract antisocial behaviour at the moment because they're lying empty, identifying sites with their local authorities, ensuring the local authority officials are actually delivering all of the tools that the government has given them. We've had 8 different local authorities into the housing committee over the last number of months, and they're all talking about an increase in public housing supply, but I've yet to come across one of the councils that is using all of the different tools. And I think that's one of the issues we have. We need local authorities to be more ambitious in the delivery of housing. I think they're working really hard. They've had more resources, more staff, but we have to be more ambitious in terms of identifying sites and pushing them through the local authorities as well,
I mean,
both from procurement and planning.
People will point to houses in their locality that have been boarded up, council houses, for years in some cases, and people will point to dereliction that has not been addressed. They'll talk about the flat or apartment over a shop that has not been made available. And then we also hear that in the UK, 3 weeks to get permission to do that kind of job, converting over the shop into an apartment. Permission here, very expensive, and it could take 3 years. You know, so where does the fault lie?
Well, when you look at what government has done, and I don't think we're being ideological about this. I think we've literally turned on every single supply stream that we can, dereliction being one of them. With Croí Cónaithe, we're giving people between 30 and 50,000 euro to turn around a derelict property. We've changed the planning regulations for old pubs that can be converted into homes. If you think from the local authority perspective, we're given 100,000 euro below the cost of construction, affordable homes are going to be sold. So 100,000 euro below the cost of construction. And on private sites where developers can't make them viable, we're also helping themselves at 100,000 euro below the cost of construction. So there's a lot happening in the market. There's a lot of changes. And of course, we have the emergency planning bill, which will be published in December as well. And there'll be big challenges for communities, for politicians, right across the board to really say, if there are thousands of people, and there are thousands of people in emergency accommodation, there are thousands of people on waiting lists, there are thousands of people who want to buy a home living in their mother's house, then we have to increase the supply. And one way to do that is to ensure that we've faster planning and that reasonable objections, when they're made, are listened to, but that unreasonable objections aren't.
Yeah. You know, the recipe for building slums basically sounds like it's looming large. You know, already we have apartments with no balconies, apartments with bedrooms which have no window to the sky, single aspect apartments, narrow, miserable, tight apartments with no accommodation, you know, no place to put a suitcase, for example, to store a suitcase. That's what we're building at the moment. If we go, you know, if we downgrade those ambitions, we're really, really in trouble. Conor Skeen, what do you make of the Taoiseach's remarks? Does he have a point?
He does have a point, and he's right to say it. I think there's a bigger conversation needs to be had to recognise that NIMBYism happens all over the world. It usually happens more in countries that are more open, so it's a symptom of your own success. It's incredibly harmful. NIMBYism is like a slow release poison, and self-harm is the very areas people are trying to attract. And within, you know, 10, 15 years of successful NIMBYism, you start to see less affordability and availability of housing, increased homogeneity, loss of quality of life. That's, NIMBYism has just destroyed San Francisco.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of those permissions that have been given under the strategic housing development initiatives, which are not built.
Yeah.
You know, so all the NIMBYism in the world didn't stop them getting permission, but something stopped the developers actually building them.
Well, there's a few different pieces to this thread. The specific one of NIMBYism is that NIMBYism is a reality everywhere, and that NIMBYism is something that can only be dealt by doing what you're doing, of having a show, raising awareness, talking about it, by being the Taoiseach talking about it. Well, it's a very slow fix getting this NIMBYism. The issue of the instruments people use to implement their NIMBYism is a separate matter, and that's invocation of the Habitats Directive, of judicial reviews. That's a secondary issue, and there's a whole bunch of other fixes required outside there. But just to stick to the brief of NIMBYism, NIMBYism is, it's a universal thing. It's the same everywhere in the world, and the only cures for it are lots of participation in planning as early as possible so that you get consensus and education of people as to what the consequences of NIMBYism tends to be. Yeah. But it's a long
How do you see the role of county development plans? Because they are a long time in the making, and generally, we're told anyway, the councillors, you know, think deeply about it. They take input from all sorts of people in the community and people who are so-called stakeholders. Then they formulate a development plan, and then on board Planola, run a coach and four through it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the there was, back in the day, so to speak, the courts regarded the county development plan as a kind of a sacred contract between society and the people who owns the land. That's breaking down, and I think that the external overturnings of those is a very unhelpful development, both in terms of looking at development decisions, but also at the very beginning. I think we have to rethink our national planning framework, where many local authorities' hands are tied by targets that have been given that are neither realistic nor attainable. So I think there's a lot of stuff that has to be done. The old-fashioned, hard-won county development plan was a very important, powerful and useful document, and I think we have to bring it back to life, so to speak, so that local councillors have a role.
Now, can we refine our planning process? I mean, in some parts of the world, you'll have an area that's designated for housing, and after that, you know, the builder, the developer, can actually just build housing. There'll be restrictions on height, there'll be restrictions maybe on density, but the rules are there, a rules-based process. So everyone knows, the locals know, who've approved the rules, one presumes, and the stakeholders, the developers, the builders and so on, they know the rules. And if they put in planning within those rules, they will get it. I mean, why don't we do something simple like that?
Well, exactly. I think that, I mean, the strategic developments like we have up in Cherrywood do exactly that. It's there, it's zoned, people participated, they had their point of view, there was a huge oral hearing, and we just built it. And that gives a certainty for everybody. So that is what we need. We need the absolute certainty. We need to shut off the hope value that you'd be able to put in an application that has nothing to do with the development plan and you'll weasel your way through it. We've got that avenue has to be utterly, completely and ruthlessly shut off. And the county development plan has got to be delivered to the letter. But we do need better plans, Pat, as well. A lot of the plans themselves need refinement. Some extraordinarily competent and good ones and some very sloppy ones, but the behaviour around implementation, as you rightly say, that's the weak link.
Yeah. There was situations where, because of the strategic housing initiatives, and, you know, Paul Hyde, now disgraced, was in charge of all of that, but the idea that you could put in for 101 units somewhere, and you'd be turned down, you know, under that. But they would, the board would come back and say, well, you can build 80. So now they don't qualify under the terms of the strategic housing development because it's only 80 units, but it never goes back to the council. I mean, where's the logic in that? Where's the fairness in that?
Exactly. There's neither technical, legal, nor ethical consistency in it. I mean, the planning acts back in the day were very simple. You put a planning application in, you either got granted or refused. You put in an application for a three-story house, it was illegal to give you planning permission for a two-story house. You were meant to get permission or rejected. So that type of external interference is just not helpful. And all I can do is reiterate what you just said a moment ago, which is the county development plan's got to rule.
Yeah. The last thing, I suppose, that, you know, one person's NIMBYism is another person's genuine concern. The labelling of NIMBYism, you know, where people really feel maybe their neighbourhood in Dublin 8 is being destroyed by what is proposed. I mean, how do you distinguish between people who deeply feel, but also who happen to be standing in the way of massive accommodation bills?
Well, there's three answers. The first is that housing is a three-corner argument. There's residents who want no change, there's activists who only want their change, and then there's officials who are trying to manage the change. So that's the first problem. Good plans should anticipate the majority of those. Plans these days are very sophisticated documents that are subject to strategic environmental assessment and flood risk assessment and traffic impact assessment. So a lot of the fears should have been thought through at the beginning, but we are still not making good enough plans. Planning anticipates and accepts there will be changes and impacts and try to put the mitigation measures in place before the housing application comes in.
One of the other aspects is that they lay down things like guidelines. You're familiar with DMIRS, which decides on the width of local roads and all the rest of it. And that is treated by developers and sometimes by planners as advisory rather than mandatory. I mean, it's crazy stuff.
Well, there is a fine line between having rules and having performance criteria. Having performance criteria tends to get the best out of land and the best out of planners. So once that type of knowledge begins to become weaponized, it's a retrograde step. If that kind of flexibility allows better solutions. And this is part of the problem, that we have robbed the individual developers, their advisors and the planners of the ability to be ingenious and creative out of an anxiety to have absolute certainty. There's a balance between all of those things. We've got to have high quality environments for everybody at the end of the day.
All right. It's a never ending topic. But Conor Skeen, a planning lecturer, Sunday Independent columnist, and before that, Paul McAuliffe, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West. Thank you both very much for joining us. Well, now it's time for the big one. So a record 4 rollovers, and that means we have a massive number in the pot today in the cash machine. That number is €90,364.27. If you've entered since 5 o'clock last Thursday afternoon, you're still in to win. To enter, text PLAY to 57557 before 3 this afternoon. After 3, we make that call. If it happens to be to your phone, answer within 5 rings, tell us the prize amount, and you win the money. The cost is €2.50 plus your standard message rate over 18 only. You're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. Full terms on newstalk.com. But do remember today's total in case we call you. €90,364.27. Text PLAY to 57557. Some of the texts coming in about asylum seekers and refugees and so on. Peter says, I was fortunate enough to take a flight recently. I went through the screening process, removed some clothing items, and on arrival at my destination in another EU city, I was asked for my passport. If I'd destroyed that or flushed it down the toilet, I'm pretty sure I'd have been deemed a security threat and returned to Dublin. My point is, what is the point of post 9/11 security checks if even one person can avoid these laws and wander freely into the state? That's from Peter. This is about the point is people to get on a plane need to show identification documents, and then suddenly at Dublin Airport, they're gone. That is just chance in your arm, and it should be dealt with appropriately. Ireland has made a noble effort to accommodate Ukrainian and other refugee groups, and rightly so, but there is no shame in saying to the world that we've reached our limit. It is worse to pretend we have no limit for the sake of some grand act of national virtue signalling. Another one, typical Catholic guilt trip in relation to immigrants. We're a tiny island already in complete crisis due to terrible government policies, says that. Now, how do we keep rats, seagulls and foxes out? We'll get some expert advice. But next, Professor Luke O'Neill on a potential reproductive crisis.